All right, hi, this is Tony Teagarden with TonyTeagarden.com, and I'm here with our special guest, Tim Brownson. And Tim, before we get started, I just want to share a little bit about your background, who you are, and what you do with everybody so that you don't have to. But Tim is actually a certified life coach, very high and in-demand certified life coach out of Orlando, Florida. And he's also an NLP master practitioner, master of neurolinguistics, and we'll talk about that a little bit, I'm sure. Certified hypnotherapist. He's a public speaker and also a published author, which currently I know, Tim, you've got several online books that are available, such as Don't Ask Stupid Questions, a book around stress, another one on goals, another one on fear, anxiety, and panic, and you've got some others out there as well. But I also know you are a published author, co-author of the book How to Be Rich and Happy, which we'll talk a little bit about later, I'm sure, but I know you've got an amazing mission there to give away 1 million copies of that book, which is just an absolutely amazing cause, and I'm really behind you on that, as you know. So we'll talk about that and give you some info there. So anyway, welcome to the interview, and I'm excited to talk about our topic today.
Thank you, and it's thanks very much for asking me to do it, Tony. It's always a pleasure to talk to your good self.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everybody misses all the good stuff that we edit out, so you know we'll see if we can't let that out of the bag here soon. But I asked you on this this interview to talk about something. You know, both you and I know they're it's an extremely important topic of values, and you and I were both totally going off the cuff on this interview today, but. You know, for someone who has never, maybe heard the term values, when it comes to personal development, or, really have no idea, never heard of it, or maybe have heard of it, but haven't quite put the pieces together, what would be your take on values? Like, what would you want to express?
Okay. I mean, yeah, and this is pretty much what I explain to clients when I first go through the process with them, that values drive all our behaviors. So if I might say to a client, what do you want to achieve from the coaching process? And they may say, well, I want to earn $1 million. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with wanting to earn $1 million. But it's like, well, what's driving that behavior? What will that $1 million give you? So if you say that to a client, they may say, well, it's going to allow me a big house and it's going to allow me to go on vacation. It's like, okay, that's very good as well. But what reasons, why do you want those things? What does that give you? Mm-hmm. And if you keep asking the questions enough, you start to get down to what's really driving the behavior and they become values. So that somebody could say, well, it gives me freedom. So freedom's a classic value that people want. Freedom, the ability, it can be freedom of speech or freedom to travel or freedom, financial freedom in terms of that they're not concerned about money because they've got a big enough income. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason why you want to know there's a number of reasons that we may get into as to why I as a coach want to know that. But also, what happens if you don't get to that $1 million? So if you don't hit the goal, does that mean that somebody's sort of resigned to a life of misery or whatever? And the answer is, well, no, of course not, because you look to achieve the values without necessarily going the same route. So it may be, okay, well, you want, $1 million is going to make you, give you a sense of freedom, but do we really need $1 million? Let's sit down and work it out, and what do we really need? So because when you're actually in alignment with your values, money becomes a lot less significant to people. People want money because they always think what it will give them. Mm-hmm. But if you're actually living in alignment with your own values, if you know what they are, and not many people do, very few people do, and you're in alignment with them, then you really, I don't earn great money, Tony. As you know, I used to earn a lot more money when I worked in sales. Mm-hmm. I walked away from a six-figure salary, but I don't really care anymore because I don't mind whether it's Monday or, it's Friday. We're doing this interview on a Friday. I'm not thinking, I can't wait to get Tony off this so I can go and have a beer because it's, thank God it's Friday. It's
right.
Party time. Apart from the fact I'm too old to party now officially. Because it's, I love my job. Yeah. So whether it's a Friday to me or a Monday doesn't really make any difference. So it's kind of like, well, let's look for what makes you happy and then see how much money we need to do that rather than earn as much money as you can and then work out what to do with that money to make yourself happy. That's what most people do.
Yeah, and would you say that it'd be safe to say that money really is a result? For an example, obviously if somebody wants to generate a lot of money or that's obviously not their main goal, but by being in alignment with their values, that it's probably, could help them increase their money value as a result of following what they want to do?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't believe, Tony, that people can't be successful doing something they don't like, because I've seen enough examples of that myself. I do think that people are going to be much more successful. You know, people are a lot better at spotting. On the whole, we're a lot better at reading each other than we think.
Mm-hmm.
People think that they're not very good at reading, but we're intuitively good at knowing when people are genuine. Do we make mistakes? Yes, of course. Something, say, in our industry, in the self-development industry, you know, if you love what you do, that comes out. And people want to work with you, you're more likely to get results because people, you know, are excited because you're excited. We pass on the enthusiasm for it. So, you're far more likely to be successful as if you're doing something just because you're going to get a big paycheck. I mean, money is a motivation, is a law of diminishing returns, that eventually it's very, very poor long-term motivator for people, money. People yeah. think it is, but, you know, you pay somebody, you know, put them on a production line where they're just banging in widgets or something and say, well, I'll give you $1 million a year. They may stick it out for a year or so, but you're probably going to find that they're just going to want to walk away from it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, clearly, because there's no real emotional... let me ask you before I maybe, you know, assume that. What would you think the reason would be? Is that there's no emotional drive there? There's no cause? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought you were going to say emotional connection there, which I would have agreed with, and you probably were. That was new. I would agree with that completely. And if you can hear some strange noise, I've got just Doberman groaning and rolling around on the floor, so I do apologise, but she wants to be part of the interview. So, yeah, I think that definitely it's sort of connection and meaning. So, you know, as a coach, when people say to me, or I talk about the people's purpose for existence, the meaning of their life, should we say,
mm-hmm.
it's like most people look at me like, I've stripped naked and put a warthog on my head or something and started right. dancing around, because it's just like, how could you possibly know that? But you can. Mm-hmm. You can know what your purpose in life is. Now, the thing is with life's purposes, it can be very generic or general or vague mm-hmm. or very specific. So for me, my purpose, I don't want to sound all corny, Tony, but my purpose is to help people. That's what I feel like I was put here to do, or what I want to do. That's what makes me feel good, is to help other people. But it could be something very, very specific. You may get somebody that, John, my co-author in How to Rich and Happy, he's got a goal. I forget the figures now, but he's delivering water to a village in Africa. They're building some wells and so on. So they've got a specific purpose that they want to achieve over the next 15 years or whenever it is. So... yeah, and those purposes are always aligned with our values of what's really important to us. And that's when we feel good. Yeah, I often describe it as being similar to the flow state. It's not the same as the flow state.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar, that life doesn't seem so like you're pushing the boulder uphill all the time. It's like I'm going to mix a metaphor now. It's like you've turned your boat around and you're going down with the stream. So you've pushed the boulder one way and gone down in the back. You know what I mean? So and that's what it feels like when we're actually connecting with whatever we're doing.
Yeah, you know, and tell me if you'd agree that, you know, generally that's a feeling in your body. So when we feel a lot of tension, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a sign. Could that be a sign that, you know, that you know, you're going to work? I mean, I know, you know, like you talked about in the past, going to, you know, a specific job or a specific, you know, work that I was doing, and then physically feeling ill, like not, like feeling like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, paying attention to that tension and that feeling. Would you agree that's probably some sort of conflict going on there?
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
Almost certainly. I mean, those things can be temporary if you're going through a, you know, the hump at work or whatever with stuff going on. But yeah, if that's happening to you day after day, you know, I've had clients where they literally start feeling sick on a Sunday evening at the thought of going back to work the following day for another week.
Yeah.
And we spend half our waking life at work, our adult waking life at work. And to be doing it half of that time with something you don't want to do is just, it's almost criminal. But we're conditioned to it by society. And also, it's not as easy as some people in self-development industry want you to think. to actually go and do what you love. You know, it's a fallacy that you can just go and do what you love and you'll be fantastically successful and people want to pay you. Of course not. You know, you've still got to understand business as well. Mm-hmm. I know loads of life coaches that are failing because they don't understand marketing, they don't understand, you know, how to, the fundamentals of running a business and selling themselves.
Right.
So, but it makes it more likely that you're going to be successful if you're doing something that you love to do. Presuming there's a market for it, you know, Seth Godin talked in Purple Cow about, you know, it's okay having a purple cow, but you know, if whatever it is, there's no demand for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't matter how good or how alignment with your values it is, you're going to fail fundamentally.
Right.
But yeah, most people, I mean, I was the same when I worked in sales. So I used to, and to me, I didn't know it at the time, but looking back on it now, it's obvious I've got value conflict. So I really value integrity. And freedom and peace. And they're not really things that you get a fat lot of in sales. Certainly integrity, you know, most large blue chip sales organizations that I've worked for were that the higher up the chain you went, usually the integrity went the opposite direction and you were being asked to do all sorts of things that, you know, just felt uncomfortable to me. You know, not stuff that I like to do.
Right. So before I ask you this other question, I really want to get clear for, you know, for the person who's watching this right now, why it's important that they at least understand what values are, is that these values very well could determine the quality of their life. Could we sum it up in that easy of a term?
Yeah, definitely. I'd go a step farther and say they will determine the quality of your life.
Yeah.
If you don't understand what your values are, you can get lucky. Some people slot in and maybe they don't think of them as values, but they get a general understanding. Mm-hmm. But you don't. I'll give you a great example. This is what I talk about in the book, Tony. So I got a guy came to me and he was starting, and I've got to be careful how I work because I know I changed it a little bit in the book because I want to identify a client, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he worked in IT. And he was very, very successful. Mm-hmm. And wanted to be an attorney. And so in his mid-30s or whatever, he'd gone back to law school. And he was about halfway through his second year, and he was absolutely acing it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and said, I want to hire a coach just to make sure that I've made the right decision. Okay, so we went through the process of a value elicitation, which is me getting to understand what his values are through a process that would take too long to go through now. But I always also look at anti-values. They're the things that we really want to avoid.
Yeah.
Okay. The anti-values can be words like conflict, infidelity, mm-hmm. stress, anxiety, worry. You know, the kind of things I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I did the process, and then I got his eight top core values and his eight anti-values. Excuse me. And his top anti-value was conflict. And his second one was stress. I'm like, and this guy wanted to be an attorney. So I said, what do you think then? He said, yeah. So are you concerned at all about the anti-values? You know, I said, it's a fairly high conflict, high stress industry.
Yeah.
No, not really. He said, I'm sure you can teach me some stress management techniques. I'm like, yeah, I can, but the best one is not to get stressed in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, basically what he'd done is he'd hired me to confirm. He already made his decision. Yeah. I would love to say he saw that and the light bulb came on because he was making a mistake and he didn't carry out the law school. But that's not what happened. He was he'd invested so much financially, emotionally, that he wasn't even seeing what was in front of him.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I think, you know, and you and I have talked about this before, and, you know, this idealistic view of the world that people get, and, you know, Where you know, and obviously I think you and I both know where this comes from. It comes from the people that we're around. It comes from a lot of the marketing. It comes a lot from, you know, big corporations and everything that we see and the flashy, bangy things all the time. And we have this projected idealistic view. Would you agree that there are people when they don't know what their values are, when they don't have a clear-cut idea of what those are, that it leaves them susceptible to these, you know, to fall into these idealistic views? And like you said, you know, he become completely emotionally invested in it, financially or whatever else, and decided that's what he wanted to do. Now, later on down the road, he might figure that out, that it's not what he really wanted. Would you agree that that's true?
Definitely. And they'll probably figure it out. I mean, I've worked with clients that have gone through law school and medical school where they figured it out when they're stuck with $250,000 worth of school debt. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the options are limited then, because they've still got to pay that off. So you can't decide you want to flip burgers after you've got, you know, I've my wife's best friend is a doctor, mm-hmm. and so is her sister. And the reason why they're both doctors is because the father wanted them to be a doctor. Neither of them like it.
Yeah.
That's just almost frightening. But yeah, going back to the cycle thing, absolutely right. I mean, I've just had my niece here from the UK, and it's the first time I've seen her for about 4 years, and she's 27, and she, you can imagine that sort of age, she's very much into party and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she brought a load of magazines with her from the UK, all celebrity magazines. Mm-hmm. And you look at this stuff, and to me, it just makes me smile now, because I'd probably read it 50 years ago, but you look at this stuff, and you just think, holy crap, you know. Yeah. People are being sold a lie.
Yeah.
This is how you're going to be. If you're not at this level, then you know, this is what you should be aspiring to.
Yeah.
The celebrities are the most, you know, well-balanced human beings on the planet. You know, yeah. It's just like, and it's a myth, you know. And but that starts a lot younger, Tony. Mm-hmm. It starts, you know, it's really sort of, we learn that or we adopt that right from, I don't know, probably the age of 2 or 3, when we see what's going on around us, when we see maybe a father that's never there at night because he's in the office working long hours, and he'll justify that to himself because he's like paying for his kids' college education that may or may not happen 16 years down the road. Right. And I've had clients doing that as well. Like, they never see the kids growing up because they're paying for something that might happen down the road.
Right.
It's like, would you not? You know, family's so important to you. And that's when a value, because family will often come out in people's values as being important, mm-hmm. but they often don't demonstrate that with the behaviour. So family's important, and the justification comes in, well, I've got to go and do a job that takes me away from family for 3 days out of the week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they go and do that, and straight away they're out of alignment with the values.
Yeah.
And they're never going to feel fulfilled at that, because it's, you know, you've got that cognitive dissonance, two different opinions or desires at the same time.
Right.
And that's why a values hierarchy is important, so you can understand, okay, which is the first one we want to meet? So that's family. Okay, your family comes first.
Yeah.
I'll give you a great example of this, an interesting one, if I may, and that's, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm sure a lot of people know Gary Vaynerchuk, and I've got a lot of time for him. I like him. I've had a number of conversations with him. He wears his heart on his sleeve. Mm-hmm. But he always talks about family first. But he's usually talking about that when he's at some airport, mm-hmm. tweeting about how important his family.
Right.
The guy's a millionaire. I presume he's a millionaire. I mean, mm-hmm. So, we'll go and spend time with them, then.
Right.
Yeah, will you be glad in 25 years' time or 30 years' time when your parents are no longer alive? I don't know about how his mum's still alive. I don't know about that. And this isn't a dig at Gary at all, because I really like the guy. But right. Will you be glad you were tweeting that from Denver Airport or whatever? Or would you prefer you were there actually telling them in person?
Yeah, actually demonstrating it with your
precisely.
Life. Yeah.
It's very easy to say things like that.
Yep.
You know, the people that are actually doing it, they're aren't on Twitter because they're going and spending time with the family.
Sure.
Like I said, this is not a knock on Gary, a guy I really like. It's not a knock on anybody. It's just more of an observation.
Right.
What is it that really, you know, what are the things that you're going to be really glad you did mm-hmm. 20 or 30 years' time? Because people tend to regret the things that they didn't do.
Right.
The things they did. And if that's, you know, it's a cliche to say nobody lies on the deathbed saying, I wish I'd spent more time watching soaps or in the office.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, but it's true.
Right. But people, in many cases, you and I have seen, they don't have the ability to future pace to put themselves actually in that emotional state.
Exactly.
Now, they might see it, and we know people think in pictures, but they're not actually emotionally be able to put themselves, you know, forward pace in that state. You know, and it's so funny because I've used that so many times in my coaching as well. You know, so again, I kind of really want to stay on this path here of, you know, this values and money, because you and I both know this is it seems to be a big point in a lot of people that I talk to, right? And, you know, you just actually came out with a post, I believe it was a post recently or something you had mentioned about you had some of, you know, one of the greatest quarters that you've had and some of the best months that you've had, you know, financially with your coaching practice, which I'm sure is, you know, is obviously because you've done a great work and everything else. But you actually just recently dropped your prices. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about how, because generally most people would be trying to charge more prices, higher prices.
Yeah. You know?
And so talk to me about how this lines up with values.
Well, the thing is, Tony, and you're right, it would, and the, you know, it does. It would be very easy to say what I'm doing is commercial suicide because you know, from a business standpoint, you're constantly testing the markets. Will the market bear? What can I charge? Mm-hmm. There are some people. I mean, there are coaches. I mean, Michael Neal's an example who charges 50 grand. If you're not doing write a check for 50 grand, you're not going to get to work.
Yeah.
That's fine if that's what he wants to do. I have no issue with somebody spending the money on him or him mm-hmm. charging that. If people want to pay for it, that's down to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I got into coaching because I want to help people. Mm-hmm. And what I've started to see, so yeah, the back end of last year, September, the final quarter of last year, from the end of September, was the best quarter I've had in 7 years of coaching. And January actually even outperformed that. It was my best month ever since I've been coaching. So I started to think, but I've got a number of clients on at the moment, and I've got choosier and choosier. So when I do a client consult, it's as much as whether I want to work with the client as whether they want to work with me. It's got to cut both ways, obviously.
Yeah, agreed.
But I started to think, well, sometimes I take clients on because maybe I'm not quite so busy, or you know, maybe I've only got like a week, you know, week working out that I know are going to be problematic because maybe. You know what my sense of humour is like, and we're not joking. If people could listen to the 5 minutes before we started doing this interview, they'd know what my sense of humour is like. I have fun doing this.
Yeah.
It's fun. That's why it doesn't feel like a Friday or a Monday or whatever, because I'm enjoying it because it's fun. So I started thinking, and also a lot of people, I had a number of people contact me, either via email or on my phone. I had about four, I think it was, in a very short period of time that were like, I had two people say, I'm saving up to work with you at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think, these are the people I want to, these people desperately want to work with me, and I'm pricing myself out of their marketplace.
Okay.
So what I thought was, well, I know how much I can live on. You know, I don't drink. We haven't got any kids. A couple of Dobermans are a bit expensive, I must admit. We haven't got an extravagant lifestyle. You know, we live in a nice part of Orlando and Windermere. But, you know, we don't spend massive amounts of money. I'm not bothered about vacations here. I used to spend 10 grand a year on vacations because I was so stressed. But now, you know, the vacation to me is grab a beer and go and sit by the pool for an hour and read a book.
Right.
And so I was thinking, well, how much do I need? How can I make my job look better? And the answer came back with working with people that I really want to work with, the people that I would work with for free if I had got 10 million in the bank. So I thought, okay, well, what if I drop my prices significantly and see if that tempts a few people like that in, and then I can get to the point where it's a bit of a risk, Tony, to be honest, because I've got to keep full because I haven't got the same room for margin for error for now. If I had a, you know, because August traditionally is a terrible month for coaching. Well, it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really scrambling to stay full in August.
Yeah.
And I know some coaches that are getting just nothing, you know. So it's a bit of a gamble. If it doesn't work out, then I may have to put them back on. But I'm fairly confident. And that fits in with my values of wanting to help people. You know, I am so demotivated. Not demotivated, that wouldn't be fair, but so unmotivated by money. I just, as long as I can pay my basic needs, you know, I used to spend $1,000 on the suit, you know, when I worked at sales.
Sure.
The idea now is appalling to me. You know, it's like, I only got at Walmart. Walmart, Target.
Right. Yeah, Target at least, yeah.
Walmart. You know, so it's very much a value thing that, you know, I want to help people. And it's difficult. Often the people that most need coaching help are the people that haven't got as much money.
Yeah.
You know, so let the super coaches, as Michael Neal calls them, go after people with loads of money. That's fine.
Sure.
They can do that. And I'd rather focus my efforts on people. That doesn't mean to say I don't want rich people to hire me.
Sure.
I don't mind that, you know, but I also want to give more people options because Omen coaching is struggling to find its feet. And a lot of that, I think, is down to people overpricing themselves, especially people that have established themselves on the internet, they're great at marketing and just think, you know, oh, I can charge this because I've got a captive market now.
Right.
I know, I may have told you a story before, and I won't name the coach, but I know one coach who started up, she got no experience, hadn't done a day's training in coaching in her life, and she set up by charging $500 an hour and immediately got some clients because people thought, wow, she must be good, she charges $500 an hour.
Yeah.
And I know because I had one of their ex-clients come to me.
Right.
And I had to clean up the mess.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because coaching is not regulated. Anybody can say they're a coach. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah. Let me go back to your decision, because in your book that you have, the values book, which I want to, you know, we're going to talk about here in a minute, you actually had a chapter. It's one of my favorites, because you know me, I go back and forth between being woo-woo and, of course, analytical. And, you know, I stomp around in both areas, and I operate from more of the emotional aspect, and I back it up with the logic, and some people operate from the logic and back it up with the emotional and vice versa. So,
yeah.
But I'm obviously, being a coach, I understand these aspects, but the going with your gut instinct, This is one of those things where many, many years ago, it's just something I intuitively would do and I wouldn't really question it. But as I've gotten older and I've almost become, maybe a great way to say it was, I've become consciously incompetent, right? Was this a gut instinct on your part to know that's what you needed to do or what you wanted to do? Talk to me about that, because one of the chapters in the book is about going with your gut instinct. And this obviously must have been some sort of gut instinct.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm very, very much the same as you. And it's weird, Tony, because if you just said to me, so I've always been a believer in gut instinct. And one of the things I say to clients when I'm closing a client prospect call, nearly always the last thing I'll say to them, I said, go with your gut instinct on this. If this feels like a good fit for you, let's do it. If it doesn't, then don't save your money. Because you know, when you say to people, how often your gut instinct, is it usually right? And they say yes, and how often do you overrule it? It's like, oh, well, yeah, you know, often I'll say, oh, I knew I shouldn't have done that, or I knew I should have done that, or whatever. You hear people say that all the time.
Sure.
And so I just noticed this with people, and also being in sales as well, you know, I'd see it crop up with people going with the gut. Can your gut instinct be wrong? Yes, of course it can be wrong. But until about 2, maybe 3 years ago, I couldn't have explained to you the science behind it. I'm not going to go into it now because I'm not a new scientist, but there's been some tremendous, tremendous breakthroughs in neuroscience over the last sort of, really the last 10 years. It's been more reported the last 5 in terms of books coming out explaining what's happening in neuroplasticity. And this is one of the things that they've made advances in. The fact that, you know, when you're using your gut instinct, you know, basically, when you're having a thought, you're thinking about something at a conscious level, you're using your prefrontal cortex. Bands with a gut instinct. So if you go to put your hand on a fire, you pull your hand out way before it's got to your prefrontal cortex. Say, oh, Tony, that feels hot. You're about to put your hand, you better move it back. Because you haven't got time. And that's what a gut instinct is. It's the old part of our brain that's far more energy efficient than the new part. So your brain uses between 20 and 25% of your glucose in the form of energy every day. And a lot of that is the conscious stuff. Your brain is just as active at night at a conscious level as it is in the daytime, just as active. It's still doing stuff, beating your heart, etc. You know, digesting food, not blinking your eyes, obviously that's a stupid thing unless you're awake. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? So we now know what's happening at a gut instinct level in terms of it's a different part of the brain sending signals. I think, you know, there's two books. Anybody that's interested in this, it's a fascinating topic. There's two books you may want to sit links to if you can. So I would really recommend them. One is Your Brain at Work by David Rock, which is probably the best self-development book I've ever read.
Great book.
And the other one would be Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. I mean, Gladwell's not a scientist, is he?
Right.
That's the New Yorker. But that's the best book on rapid cognition. He tends to explain what's happening in terms of in loads of examples, loads of really, really cool stories, whereas David Rock talks a lot about the science behind it, but in a layman's way, so it's easier it's easier to absorb, and the two complement each other really well. And also, David Rock goes into a lot of other things. And explains how they work, the things that we didn't know, like reframing negative events into positive. We now know that structurally changes the brain. So the crowd that would just say, oh, it's just optimistic thinking, you're not being realistic. It's not like that at all. You're actually rewiring your own brain.
And this is neuroplasticity, right?
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the word didn't even exist 10 or 12 years ago, Tony. No. This is really new science.
Right.
It's been so helpful. Also, like, for instance, with stroke patients, where you know, part of the brain would stop working, they can now rewire the brain.
Yep.
It's just it's amazing when you get into it.
So, one of the things that comes up, because you and I are using, and we have to be cautious of this when we're, when we know our audience is watching and, using these fancy words, as I would say, neuroplasticity, it sounds, someone who says, this it sounds like it's interesting, sounds like it helped me, but it sounds like a lot of work. What would you say to that person?
Well, I think, as a coach, the cool thing at the moment is that I can explain some of this stuff in terms of how it works to clients, but I don't need to if I don't want to. So in terms of the work, the work is, as a coach, often clients will say to me, have you got any homework? And I'll say, well, have you not got enough? It's like it's all the stuff we've been talking about. I want you to absorb that. I want you to think about it. Because people think if they're not writing something down, they're not doing anything. So when you say all the work involved, really it is work, because to think new thoughts does take effort. Mm-hmm. That's why I get frustrated when people say it takes as much energy to think a positive thought as it does a negative one. It's just not true, unless you're already a positive thinker. If you're a negative thinker, then you've got to use a different part of your brain that uses more energy.
Right.
So there is that. But a lot of this stuff, Tony, can be done last thing at night and first thing in the morning, just before we go to bed and just go to sleep. And we start thinking the things that, whatever it is for that person, and first thing in the morning. So in terms of a lot of work, I'm not sure there is. And if you can give people the belief that it will change, I think people are sometimes reluctant to put the work in because the belief isn't there to begin with that the work will pan out as they expected. Do you know what I mean? So I think if you can say to people, look, this works, and not only does it work, I can tell you how it works. Suddenly you lift that belief system, and it's like it gives them hope. Oh, well, I can change this.
Right.
And suddenly they're more likely to do it. And it comes back to something I wanted to pick up that you mentioned about future pacing, people be able to see the future. You're absolutely right. Human beings are terrible at understanding how they're going to feel about something in the future, and that's where visualization comes in.
Yeah.
And processes and really future pacing is used at putting yourself in that environment, seeing it with as much sort of as much detail as you can, using all your senses, and make it real.
Right.
And then that allows, we can shift our mindset and start to make changes.
Yeah. Talk to me about, for an example, a person. I really want to kind of dance around between motivation and inspiration, which, of course, how I feel about that based on some of the work I've done. But aligning when you've got vision and values, what would be the benefit? Like, we're just talking about right now, someone getting absolutely clear on that vision, that future pacing of where they want to be, what they want to get out of it, and aligning their values. Can you talk to me about how those two things would maybe impact the quality of their life and moving forward?
Well, I think the two. I think if you do the one, you get the other.
Yeah.
So if you've got a vision of what your life wants to look like, you can then sort of strip away, and that will give you that person's values.
Right.
It's really, really that straightforward. Now, it's a little bit more difficult the other way around, because I start from the opposite end of the process, because most clients that come to me actually don't know what they want.
Yeah.
And they're actually a bit sheepish. So that's what I specialize in, unsticking people. So very rarely do I get a client saying, I've got this big goal and I want to work through it with you, because that's not really what jazzes me up. So I'm starting from a point of just knowing somebody's values. And then we start to try and build the structure around that. It's difficult to explain because it's going to be different for each person. It's going to be dependent on the values. It's going to be dependent on the personality or whatever. But once I can see somebody's values, I get a massive insight as to what drives them as a person. And taking the attorney guy as an example, if I'd have looked at his values before I'd met him, I wouldn't be talking to him about a career in law.
Right.
Obviously that's not going to fit. It's like, well, let's look for things that are going to fit your values. For instance, there's a lot of talk, as you well know, about people wanting to be location independent at the moment. So that comes almost certainly from a value of freedom.
Right.
The freedom to travel and to see or whatever. It could be adventure as well. So if I see that, well, that it's no good sort of advising that person, not that I would advise them, or sort of gently guiding them towards a career, in corporate America, where they're going to be working in an office, or they're going to be tied, get 2 weeks vacation a year, etc.
Yeah.
I think, to give a concrete example is difficult, without knowing the actual individual circumstances. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. You know, would you say that a person could, right now, someone who's watching this, who maybe, because you and I both, I've actually asked clients, you know, how clear are you on your values? And I've had them say unequivocally, absolutely clear on them. Great. And then we go through it and they realize just how unclear on their values they are, because I'm like, well, you can tell by look at what your life demonstrates currently.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the times I've had clients say to me, oh, I know what my values are, and I've taken them through the process, and they're nothing like what they thought they were.
Right.
You know, they don't really understand them.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in terms of if people, I don't necessarily think somebody's life, you can look at their life and understand their values.
Mm-hmm.
You can, because they're, most people are out of alignment with the values.
Right.
So, for instance, if you've got a value of, say, honesty is really important to you, that doesn't mean to say that you can't be a criminal at all. It just means it just means that you're always going to feel not necessarily bad about it. You're always going to have that sense that this isn't the right thing to do. I know that's a very extreme, ridiculous example, but do you know what I mean? So, if you've got, so you could have a value or an anti-value, say, of conflict, and be getting into an argument. So that doesn't mean to say you haven't got that anti-value. It just means that you're not in alignment with it. You almost can't control it. So I think it's difficult to look at somebody's life and say, well, this person has this value, and that. I don't know that at all with a client. But what I do know is if somebody's stuck or has a sense that something's not right, it's always value related.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
So that's the starting point for me. You know, when I've done the process, I usually do it in my second session with clients. Mm-hmm. These clients have hired me for 4 and 6 sessions where we've done the value conflict and it's just been like, okay, we're done now. I know exactly what's...
Yeah.
Why, you know, it is the most important work I do. You could put everything else together, all the NLP, all the goal setting, all the stress management, put all that together, and it's still not as important as the value work I do. Yet it's still underutilized by so many people in the coaching industry and in the corporate sector as well.
Yeah.
All businesses tend to lie about the values to make themselves
more. Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, you know, on that same topic, and talking about motivation, inspiration, so one of the chapters you talk about in the book is how can my values motivate me?
Mm-hmm.
So you just got through talking about, you know, the person goes through and they see their values and they kind of see what's going on now after you've done the work with them. You know, kind of touch on that topic, like how can my values motivate me then?
Okay, if you're stuck. And again, it can be, you know, it obviously depends on the person. Supposing you've got a value of freedom. So freedom is an important value for you. Mm-hmm. And you cannot, you're lying in bed in the morning and it's a bit cold and it's, you know, your central heating's broken down and it's like minus 20 outside and you don't want to get out of bed. And the reason why you don't want to get out of bed is because you're focusing on how cold the house is, you're focusing on the fact you've probably got to scrape ice off your windshield, and it's the... But if you focused instead on the ability that meeting is going to give you maybe an order or maybe a new client or whatever that's going to move you towards your freedom. So it's a question of shifting your focus. People focus on the immediate. People focus, we're wired up to focus more on what's wrong. That's not people just being negative. That's how we, you know, our evolution as a crew that we...
Yeah.
You know, we're all on the lookout for danger all the time. That's why, you know, so many people get stressed about things that pose no relevant danger, because that's how we've been, you know, hardwired over tens, hundreds of thousands a year.
Yeah.
So what it is, it's being conscious of thinking, of bringing that to your forefront of your mind. You're like, okay, you know what, I don't want to get out of bed, but I do want that freedom, you know, further down the road. And this is what that's going to feel. It's going to feel great. And you use that.
Yeah.
And then... hopefully, I'm not saying you're going to spring out of bed, you know, but
right.
Get you out of bed. So it's motivation at that level.
Yeah, right. Because by holding that vision, and I love what you said there, the feelings, right, the emotions, being able to put yourself in that place, knowing that that's what the experience is going to be like. I just heard an interview with a guy by the name of Ken Cunningham, I believe his name is. He was actually the Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
This is the actual Rich Dad. real life. And one of the clients I work with actually did an interview with him. And he talked about the fact that the reason why people have so many challenges in accruing or quote unquote getting to their goals is because they can't think about the first or the second or the third consequence of their immediate action or inaction, which I thought was kind of interesting. So literally what you're saying here is their values can motivate them if they put themselves, again, remember, put themselves emotionally in that state of what that's going to be like, that outcome.
Yeah, correct. And that takes, some people have more difficulty than that with others because some people are better at visualizing than others. Although it's a skill,
yeah,
anybody can do it if you take the time to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other thing about visualization, just as a slight aside, Tony, is people get wrapped up in the word visualization.
Yeah.
It should really be sensualization or whatever, because you really want to be using all your senses. Because you know, smells are very powerful, very evocative of certain, of moving us from where we are now to a different mindset.
Right.
As the sound and taste and so on and so forth. So it's using all those that are available to us.
Right.
And you know, one of the things about, you know, when I talk to clients that procrastinate, and people say to me, oh, I always work better right up to deadlines. I'm like, yeah, of course you do. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. Everybody works better up to deadlines, pretty much. And the reason being is because you stress. And stress acts as it, to a certain extent, before it goes too far over at the top, stress focuses you.
Yeah.
Stress gets you, you know, there's all sorts of chemical reactions happening in the brain and the body in terms of to get you focused and to allow you to do that, and you go through work. Mm-hmm. So when people struggle with deadlines like that and sometimes get themselves into trouble, I teach them to practice to get that stress level up like 2 or 3 days earlier.
Okay.
So visualize what's going to happen if you don't hit that deadline.
Right.
That immediately starts to get the heart rate up, mm-hmm. because the human mind's terrible at knowing the difference between what's real,
yep.
and what's actually imagining. You know, otherwise, you know, nobody'd be scared at a horror movie.
Right.
Yeah, there's no sense in that. There'd be no porn industry online.
Right, right.
You know, because there has to be imagination to fool the brain into thinking something's real.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what we do, you know, with this. This is what visualization is about, really. It's about fooling the brain. And it's probably one of the most underestimated elements of self-development. And here's the weird thing about this, and you know this, Tony. Mm-hmm. Some of the most successful people in the world use it.
Oh, yeah.
Nearly all successful athletes use visualization.
Absolutely.
I do remember Ed Moses, the 400 meters runner. He was unbeaten for like about, it was probably before your time, mate. I know I'm a bit older than you, but I'm going back into the 80s. He didn't lose a 400 meters hurdles race for something like 12 years. I mean, he just won each Olympics and just never got beaten. And he used to visualize before every step going down of that race.
Right.
You know, see 100 meters runners when they focus. You know, visualization in sport and also across other industries as well. It's just that it's not very obvious to people.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating that, again, I think people start to go into that woo-woo world when we start talking about visualization.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not familiar with, you know, like you just pointed out, some of the several case studies of people that actually... entire gold medal swimming teams, you know, that have, you know, gone through and what was the same thing with basketball, you know, the visualization and, you know, the people who visualize actually shot better, you know, than the ones who did not. So, yeah, you know, very, very key there. So, you know, Tim, as we're starting to kind of wind down here, I want to kind of go through, you know, we've got this book of yours that, you know, I fell in love with, you know, because you know me, I'm big on values work. I love it. It's a big integral part of, you know, me working with clients and it's been really, really supportive in me and my own growth. I want to go through, I'm going to pick out a couple of chapters here. I don't want to give away what they're about, but what I want to do is I want you to kind of tell me what could be the cost, if you had to generalize to some degree, what would be the cost of someone not understanding how this would work in their world? Does this make sense?
I've no idea yet.
Good, exactly. I'm throwing a total curveball, so this is going to be good.
It might do. I'll give it a go.
Let's give it a go. Yeah, absolutely.
If I feign death, then it didn't make sense.
What is an external value conflict? Now, I don't want you to answer what it is, but what would be the cost of someone not understanding how this works in their life?
The easiest example would be in a job that you don't like.
Yeah.
External value conflicts, I just.
Yeah.
You've got to understand external value conflicts, or because they dictate so much.
Yeah.
So
I'm really putting your hands behind your back right now because, you know.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah. You know, but you're right. I mean, it could be literally the difference between someone living a fulfilling or you know, maybe living in their fulfilling purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And staying in a job where they're stifled and they're not living in their highest good. Is this true?
Yeah, absolutely it is, yeah. And let me say one thing, just as a bit of a teaser.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody listens to this, if you can think of somebody, a person, that really rubs you up the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
it's almost certainly a value conflict.
Exactly. And I have to say this because you're absolutely right that, would you agree, no two people have the exact same value systems?
I pretty much agree. There are millions. Put it this way, I've never had a client that had the same top three as mine, and mine aren't like out there or anything like that. So, yeah, I'd say probably right.
Yeah, so one of the biggest keys I know in business and relationships and money, you know, is the ability to communicate to other people's value systems. Would you disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree. I'd agree, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I know from reading your book, I was able to pull a lot of stuff there that I thought I was already pretty knowledgeable about, but actually has assisted me in creating deeper relationships. And this is not because that's the tagline of your book, by the way, but it allows me to more effectively communicate to other people's value systems. And I love what you just said there, was that generally what happens is it's almost always a conflict communication issue. Mm-hmm. So great teaser there, by the way. That was a really big one for me. Let's see here. Meta values, you know, or how everything we just did may be wrong. I've got to touch on this one because that one alone, I have to tell you, that was the first one I read because just that grabbed my attention enough. So meta values, or how everything we just did may be wrong. That's one of the chapters. Just kind of tease us with that a little bit.
Well, meta values, this is something that I've been working on for a while now, and it's kind of ongoing. So a meta value is, you know, a value that sits above other values.
Okay.
So for instance, it's values that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were to try and think of one word that linked every human being on the planet, or one desire, it would be the desire to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I see a client's list and happiness isn't on there as a value, I don't think they don't want, I know they really do want to be happy. It's a meta value. It kind of sits above the other values.
Got it.
So if I get a client with a number, and I can't remember how many there are in the book now that I listed, the ones that I consider meta values. If I get a client where it's just very solid meta values, which does happen, I usually take them through the process again because I know that.
Yeah.
You know, even though health tends not to appear on a list of people that are, say, 35 and younger,
mm-hmm.
That's because they take health for granted. It doesn't mean to say, you know, it's not incredibly important to just forget about it. It's like, yeah, I'm healthy, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So again, that's a meta value. So there's a number of them, and the reasons obviously explained in the book why I feel that they're really important to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, Tim, this was, it's certainly, I could see this book getting a lot of, you know, a lot more exposure because I really feel that, again, this is a topic that literally could and does for your clients, and I know certainly, you know, mine as well, that unlocks the quality of life that they're looking to experience, that they're looking for their life to demonstrate. And it may not be the entire, you know, one big magic key that does it, but would you agree it's probably, you know, top three?
Well, what I would say it is, Tony, it's the base.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, if you don't get the base right.
Yeah, it's built,
you know,
on sand.
Yeah, it's like, so when I was working in sales, you see books. I mean, if you go and look in any bookstore, you know, tips and tricks on closing the sale. And the reason why you need tips and tricks on closing the sale is because you've not followed the sales process properly and you don't understand it and you don't know where you are. Because if you're needing tips and tricks to close the sale, you've missed something earlier on.
Right.
And this is a little bit like that. Values are like the basis of what everything Sometimes knowing your values is just enough for some people. Bang, they get that. It's like, right, this job's wrong. That's wrong. That's right. Why I'm having that issue and so on. With other people, it's just like a little bit more cerebral, a little bit more long-term as building on top of that.
Sure, sure. And it's going to be, you know, personality-based and everything else. So yeah, fantastic. So what we're going to do, is there anything that you want to mention or anything that you want to bring to the viewers, you know, focus here before we begin to wrap this up? Anything that you want to share, any last words, you know, based on this topic?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, it's pretty exhaustive, to be honest, in terms of, yeah, you know, people and overview of what it is. I'll tell you what, one thing, I thought you were going to say, when you said, what is an external value conflict? I thought you were bound to follow up that with, yeah, what is an internal value conflict?
Yeah.
And what we'll do is a key to that. People who feel guilt and shame about themselves have nearly always got internal value conflicts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't want to give them all away, but yeah, certainly that's probably one of the biggest ones. And I know in a lot of the work that I've done, and you know, I work with you know, with other coaches that are, you know, they're doing very deep work. Shame is a big one.
Yeah. It's also a terrible one, Tony, because, yeah, being guilty is not so bad. If you've done something wrong, then guilt's an inappropriate emotion. Shamed is, I am ashamed of the person I am.
And right.
Nobody should be ashamed.
Yeah. What is it? The guilty is of the behavior, and shame is of the identity. Something along that lines.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I've always understood it to be. So. So Tim, amazing book. It's called Aligning with Your Core Values, How to Get Unstuck in Life, Work, and Your Relationships. And I have to say, you know, obviously, I believe wholeheartedly in this work, and I believe wholeheartedly in your work. And for everyone who is who's watching, or, you know, this video, lots of great chapters in here, values that possibly aren't really values. Again, this one I didn't even know was coming. I didn't even see that one coming. I thought that was a great chapter. Values that possibly aren't really values. Again, something that can kind of trick you and trip you up there. One of the final things on here was ignore the results at your peril. Let's end on that. Let's talk about that real quickly.
Well, I think the attorney guy just summed that up. I'd love to make that a better story by saying he killed himself. That would be a bit harsh, wouldn't it? I don't mean a better story, but yeah, in terms of, the honest truth is, it was a couple of years since I worked with him. I have no idea where he went after that.
Yeah.
But if you know what your values are and you disregard them, then, you know, you're going to be, I'm not necessarily going to be miserable, but you're never, ever going to get close to fulfilling your potential.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you you can carry on chasing the money, and it's weird with the money thing, because people know money doesn't equal happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain element where if people are in poverty and they're struggling with bills, then it can definitely cause unhappiness and that. Mm-hmm. But people get that concept, but they only ever get it for other people. Then they go back wanting the more money and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. You don't need the money unless you can't pay your mortgage or whatever.
Right.
Really. But money's nice. And if you sent me $1 million for doing this interview, Tony, which is the minimum requirement I've got, that's why I've lowered my price on coaching, because I'm shocked.
Right.
I'd love it. I'd bank you. I'd thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And even take you out for dinner.
There you go.
You know, but it's not gonna make me any happier. People right. think it will, mm-hmm. but it's something called adaptation, and you'd adapt to your circumstances, and your baseline happiness would never rise.
No, absolutely. Do the work, you know, people. That's what I say. Do the work, you know. And again, one of the last things I know is something I've always, appreciated about you. I've seen, you know, I've watched you in the marketplace for a long time, and you know, of course, our humor definitely, coincides together. But one of the things is you've never overpromised things, and so you've always called things out as you see them, and doesn't necessarily mean anybody's got to agree or disagree, but you've always called it as you saw it, and. Someone picks up this ebook, is there an expectation maybe that they, you know, that they, or something that you think that they might be able to walk away from, you know, or walk away with, you know, from this book, or is there maybe an expectation that you could share?
Well, the minimum they're going to come out of it with it, if they do the exercise, and there's only really one major exercise, so don't get stressed. And then some people don't, you know, exercises, and it's just like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah.
The minimum they're going to come out of it is get a better understanding of themselves and be able to spot areas in their life where maybe not going as well, and by and large, the reasons they're not succeeding well. Yeah. The big takeaway we could get is what I see, you know, on a fairly regular basis with just a huge light bulb going on. Okay, I've got to stop doing this now. That's what's causing me this. So it's difficult to say because it's always, you know, all this stuff is subjective, Tony, and people take different things away from stuff, and it's all that's why I don't like making promises, because it's, you know, I don't know how somebody's going to interpret the information or how much work they're going to do around it.
Right. Well, you know, again, Tim, your book made a big impact, and I feel that I'm pretty knowledgeable, but I always leave myself about 50% empty so that I make sure I leave room to learn, you know, new stuff. And certainly, very wise. Got to stay empty. And your book certainly did that for me. And that's why, again, I want to do this interview, and I wanted to make it available to all of my readers as well. What I've done is I've got a link below the video here that a person can go ahead. And I know you've got a really cool exercise in there that comes along with this. And I believe also an audio is the...
Yeah. There's an audio, there's a Kindle version, there's a full color. Everybody gets the same. It's just one downloaded package. There's a full color, but there's a black and white PDF if people want to print it off. And there's a form. So if somebody wants to use it, if they're a coach themselves, mm-hmm. or if they want to use it in a business environment, if they're an entrepreneur and they want to check with their business values, then the book's copyrighted, but the forms aren't. So I don't mind people branding the forms. It comes as a Word document as well.
Sure.
And also, if they buy it through the link and not going to Amazon, they get a free copy of How to Be Rich and Happy.
Absolutely.
A $19 value. No
it way. Is actually $19 value, and that's a kick-ass book. I'm sorry. You know, again, I've never said this to you, but I think you maybe shot yourself in the foot with the title at times, because it seems, you know, it seems so woo-woo or out there, but I mean, it is a strong damn book. It's a great, great book with great value in it that people can use, and it's actionable. So, you know, again, great value there. And
By the way, sorry, Tony, if I could just do this, and look, can $1.5 billion Chinese people be wrong? It's now published in China as well as Germany, France, Netherlands, and Taiwan.
Outstanding, brother.
I'm sorry, I did blow my own. I'm so pumped at having the podcast. And because it goes from back to front, I don't even know where my name is on it or how it works.
Right. You just have to get one of your Chinese friends to help you out there. You know, that's awesome. Congratulations, that's great work, and I know you're touching a lot of people's lives with that. And I know ultimately that's your end goal, is to touch a lot of lives and create a lot of change. So, again, thank you for this interview and for the time. I've had a blast as always, and I'm looking forward to everybody. Again, as you're watching this, make sure you just go to the link down below. I've also got links to the two. Books that Tim pointed out earlier, so you can pick those up as well. But highly, highly, highly recommend that you pick up this book on values.
Thanks very much, Tony. Always enjoy talking to you, mate. So thank you.
Always, brother. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.